all of the most brilliant works in Bitcoin made audible. This is Bitcoin Audible with Guy Swan. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. This is Bitcoin Audible, and I am Guy Swan, sitting in the blistering heat. If anybody listens to this show religiously, you know that my AC went out like 2 weeks ago, and we're back at it. We are back to a completely busted AC, and now I have to get an entirely new unit. So I am sitting in the horrific heat, sweating my balls off, to bring you this episode. So I hope you appreciate it. But we do have a really good read today, and this is actually a really old piece about the Lightning Network, but it's such a good one that I just couldn't pass it up to read about it. And it's about the Lightning Paradox, because this always surprised me that this really even came up as a criticism against the Lightning Network, that it was going to take fees away from the miners. And I always felt that was a blatant misunderstanding of the economics involved and what Lightning would actually do. And this is just a great piece written by Alex B that really just kind of gets to the general idea of this and how markets respond to a greater efficiency and use of a scarce resource. And block space is absolutely a scarce resource that we are trying to make more efficient use of. So let's go ahead and jump into this article, and I'll try to get guys' take afterward if I don't pass out. You know, it's like 88 degrees in here right now. And if I can stay conscious, we will see if we can get guys' take on this, because I'd love to dig into it a little bit. Let's go ahead and get into Alex B's piece. This was written on March 21st, 2017, and it's titled The Lightning Paradox. The goal of this post is to argue that second layer technologies will ultimately translate to a growth in revenue for miners, who will increasingly be relied upon to secure settlements of contracts across the various use cases enabled by technologies such as the Lightning Network. The introduction of the Lightning Network was a paradigm shift in terms of how we all imagined the Bitcoin network could scale to accommodate a global demand for transactional capacity. Inspired by the ideas put forth by the system's creator, the protocol leads us to reconsider our assumptions about the nature of Bitcoin transactions and how users should leverage the unique properties of the blockchain and the resources allocated to it by its peers. Quote, intermediate transactions do not need to be broadcast. Only the final outcome gets recorded by the network. Satoshi Nakamoto. In the original implementation of the system, every transaction was to be recorded on-chain and appended to the blockchain. Early contributors to the project quickly realized that such a decentralized global broadcast system involved very poor scalability properties. Enter payment channels, an implementation of a smart contract allowing users to enter into relationships wherein consensus around the history of transactions they are involved in depends only on the participants of the contract. In case of a dispute, the Bitcoin blockchain is used as a trustless adjudicator, which ensures accountability and prevents uncooperative parties from cheating their respective counterparties. The Lightning Network, first proposed in a paper by Joseph Poon and Taj Draja, extends this construction to allow contracts to be interconnected, creating a multilateral network of counterparties and channels that is used to move obligations among peers in the network and leverage the liquidity they provide. For a high-level description of how this is achieved, I recommend Lightning Labs' Elizabeth Stark's excellent primer, available on the Coin Center website. The emergence of such a system begs us to re-examine the role of miners as the main processors of Bitcoin transactions, considering that the long-term security of the network is expected to be financed by transaction fees, many flags have been raised, questioning the decision to move the bulk of these revenue-generating transactions to a layer which miners cannot monetize directly. Fortunately, history is ripe with examples of how the introduction of more efficient technologies affected the demand for an underlying resource. More importantly, these economic dynamics are well studied and provide us with a valuable point of reference as to how the market for Bitcoin transactions may unfold post-Lightning. The price elasticity of demand. Little in-depth analysis has been made of Bitcoin's demand curve, and a great deal less of the elasticity of said demand under increasing transaction fees. On the other hand, one does not have to look too hard to detect many instances of use cases that, along the way, were priced out of the market, only to be replaced by a persistent influx of higher fee-paying transactions. Early adopters will remember the bulk of transactions originating from services such as Satoshi Dice, or other micropayment services such as faucets and tipping bots. It is worth mentioning that at its peak, the former was responsible for anywhere from 80 to 90% of Bitcoin's transaction volume. Today, most of these applications have been moved to off-chain services. Their inefficient usage of the space available in blocks made them unable to compete with organic growth of transactions coming from users who possess little to no alternative available, which could provide the same unique features that Bitcoin does. Of course, history indicates that demand for Bitcoin transactions has persisted and pushed through continuous all-time highs, even with the recent materialization of a more competitive fee market. While these are only anecdotal evidence, they offer strong indications that the demand for Bitcoin transactions is considerably inelastic. What this suggests is that the supply of space in blocks will find demand even as transaction fees increase. The reasons for this are subjective and hard to accurately assay, as they are simply the result of decisions made by independent market actors. Nevertheless, this observation has strong implications for anyone interested in figuring out Bitcoin's value proposition. When gauging the price elasticity of demand, perhaps the main determinant is the availability of substitute goods. As it turns out, it may be that the opportunity cost of opting for current alternatives, which are more centralized and less liquid or secure, is much higher than the price of having one's transaction included into the Bitcoin blockchain. The Lightning Engine. Quote, "It is wholly a confusion of ideas to suppose that the economical use of fuel is equivalent to a diminished consumption. The very contrary is the truth." William Stanley Jevons. The Jevons paradox is a staple of environmental economics used to describe how the introduction of more efficient technologies tends to increase the consumption of resources rather than decrease it. In his thesis titled "The Coal Question," Jevons challenges conventional wisdom by pointing out the resounding impact that James Watt's steam engines had on the consumption of coal during England's Industrial Revolution. With Bitcoin ushering in a new revolution of its own, it's interesting to draw parallels between Jevons' analysis and the current issue that concerns us. Provided we can agree that the space in blocks is a scarce economic resource, and considering solutions such as the Lightning Network are a clear innovation in terms of how efficiently we use this resource, can we arrive at the same conclusion that Jevons did? Quote, "New applications of coal are of an unlimited character. In the command of force, molecular and mechanical, we have the key to all the infinite varieties of change in place or kind of which nature is capable. No chemical or mechanical operation, perhaps, is quite impossible to us. And invention consists in discovering those which are useful and commercially practicable." William Stanley Jevons. I highlighted above various examples of use cases which have been priced out of the on-chain transaction market over the years. The fact is that a plethora of other use cases involving transfers of bitcoins between individuals have never made it on-chain. Consider, for example, intra-platform transfers between users of Bitcoin exchanges and other services. In a recent conference call held by Needham & Company, Wences Cesaris, CEO of Bitcoin company Zappo, revealed that his company was doing upwards of 500,000 transactions per day off-chain. These transactions are potential revenues, which the miners are never going to be able to tap into under the current technological context. More importantly, there is an entire class of potential use cases relying on high-frequency microtransactions that would never make it onto a blockchain, either because of fees, delays, or throughput. By using Lightning as an aggregation layer, we optimize the utilization of block space and allow users to process these transactions between themselves and ultimately incur fees of which a fraction is released to miners anytime a channel is opened or closed. Considering the potential rate of return bestowed to users who allocate their assets to Lightning channels, it is more likely than not that they will, in turn, be willing to pay higher fees for those on-chain transactions. Economists have long observed that the induced demand from technological improvements generally drives along with it further economic growth. This idea is more popularly known as the Kazum-Brooks postulate, and derives its insight from Jevons' argument that improving energy efficiency makes the use of resources more economically viable for a larger share of market participants and use cases. In this regard, the Lightning Network may turn out to be the steam engine of the Bitcoin economy. By introducing a cash layer, CACHE, which users can leverage for low-cost access to blockchain storage, Lightning provides a more efficient way for us to make use of the raw and scarce block space resource. Such a development creates endless opportunities for entrepreneurs, inventors, and market forces to come up with new products and services that directly contribute to the economic growth of our ecosystem. Consequently, miners will not only benefit from an increased demand for on-chain transactions, but will also profit from potentially dramatic appreciation of the underlying asset. Conclusion. Quote, "We are in the age of digital gold. We are replaying the history of money right now. And I think today we are smack dab in the 1700s. And for the past 5 to 6 years, I think we've been in 2000 BC. We've been talking about pure value, but this value is a foundation for everything else we build on top of it. First, you need money. After that, you need payment systems. After that, contracts, institutions, etc." Joseph Poon. At this most important juncture of our journey, it is important to take a step back and acknowledge how far we still have to go until we can fully realize the promises brought about by the invention of Bitcoin. While Bitcoin users tend to scoff at traditional financial systems and their failure of upholding the trust lent to them by market participants, it would be unwise for us to dismiss the innovations they fostered over centuries of evolution. We have an opportunity to learn from this history, but also to use the technology available to us today to build superior systems. This transformation will not happen without leveraging the layered infrastructure that enabled the economic growth that we have enjoyed under the old paradigm. Lightning is the first large-scale implementation of a contract system on top of Bitcoin. While it challenges early expectations about the economic relationships between protocol participants, market dynamics suggest that the outcome of this incoming revolution presents little to no drawbacks for everyone involved. New markets will be open to the benefits of all users, and the value extracted from those will necessarily trickle down to miners securing the chain backing all of these applications. For that reason, I believe the apprehension we are experiencing should lead people to enthusiasm and lead everyone to embrace the potential of these breakthroughs. We are working at the frontier of technology, and while the path ahead is unarguably challenging, we cannot allow uncertainty to prevent us from moving forward. Quote, "Nothing in life is to be feared. It is only to be understood. Now is the time to understand more so that we may fear less." Marie Curie. Thanks to the various people who reviewed and provided inputs for this post, especially to Chris Belcher for introducing me to Jevon's work. And that concludes The Lightning Paradox by Alex B. Again, I thought this was a really simplified way to lay out the argument for why the criticism that the Lightning Network would take fees away from miners is just completely backwards. And it seems like that would be a natural assumption, I feel like. Like just any basic understanding of the market and how things evolve. I think this is a well-established truth that if you have a technology that leads to additional use cases, that opens up a tool for an entirely new market use that it wasn't really economical to use in prior to that, then it justifies a higher cost at, you know, layer one because of the incredible value that you can get out of layer two, particularly just in the natural tendency to break up those fees among thousands of payments rather than one. He actually starts this off. I was going to try to describe it, but I think it fits better at the guy's take section. But just that, and it's a log chart too, which is funny. So you don't quite get the incredible impact of this. But it's from a chart from the 1700s all the way to 2000. And it's a general assessment of the price of lighting services, like just light, like it used to be an oil candle, now it's a light bulb sort of thing. Then the efficiency of our lighting technology and the total consumption of light. And what you actually see is that lighting efficiency has increased significantly, while simultaneously the price of lighting services has decreased from one down to it's like four orders of magnitude. So it's like four exponents, like 0.1, 0.01, 0.001, and close to 0.0001 of what that cost was in 1700, while the exact opposite has happened in the lighting efficiency. You've started from your baseline and basically gone 1,000x in the amount that we can produce in light versus the cost of the fuel. And rather than consumption going down, consumption has actually outpaced the efficiency. It opened lighting up to so many new uses where it was ridiculously expensive and made no sense to turn on a light to read a little bit before going to bed when it cost 1,000 times what it does today, when you had to use whale oil to actually get that use case out of it. When the price plummets so great, when the technology becomes so efficient, those sorts of use cases open up, and you can leave lights on all day. You can leave lights on all night. You can read a book till 4 o'clock in the morning. You have all these, there's not this giant cost. There's not this constant trade-off to getting light. It becomes so inexpensive that the use of it just is no longer even a consideration. And because of that, consumption goes through the roof. And I think we will see this same phenomenon, the same basic market reality happen with Lightning and Bitcoin. And I think he's right that the layered approach is the only real sustainable approach. And we've got centuries of watching a financial system build out in a layered approach to make all of these extra services and payment layers and all of these things possible. And I think we have a better tool, a much stronger, more secure, more verifiable foundation to actually start from. And Lightning is an order of magnitude innovation over the payment systems that we have today, particularly in the realm of trust and assurances as to reserves or the fulfillment of an actual contract. So Before we really dig into it, because I want to talk a little bit more about it, let's go ahead and hit our sponsor, and then we'll get back into this piece. All right, so let's talk a little bit more about this lightning paradox here. So we're going into 2 days. I didn't get this episode out yesterday because I was spending the whole day rushing around town trying to find actually in-stock air conditioning window units, and then spent the remainder into the night, about midnight, I think. I finally got both of them installed and turned them on, and began to lower the 88-degree, 90-degree temperature in my home. So if you can hear, I'm not sure if you can hear a loud, what sounds like a jet engine in the background here, hopefully not, but that's the window unit in the living room trying to make it not a million degrees in this house. So it's doing all right. Yeah, it's not horrible. It's not exactly comfortable either. So yeah, we'll get in there. But on to the actual point of the show. So Javon's paradox is it's actually a pretty simple economic truth. And it makes a whole lot of sense too. And I think this applies very strongly to lightning, and it's a very basic, like if we're considering block space a scarce resource, which it is, and not only that, it's a scarce resource because it is inversely proportional to the assurances that Bitcoin provides. And that's something, there's a quote in this piece that actually there's a whole paragraph, I think, that does a good job, because throughout this section, the price elasticity of demand, talking about the demand for Bitcoin transactions, he talks about how Satoshi Dice and a lot of other micropayment services, faucets and tipping bots that were viable very early on. Like, I think Satoshi Dice ended in like 2013, I think. They went, like, it was already pricing them out of the market. Blocks weren't even really full. 2012, they were the leading. By 2013, the process, I don't know. It was somewhere in 2013, 2014, but it was pretty well before the block size debate really got kicked into gear, that this was already priced out of the market. And that's a really important indicator for exactly what the value proposition of Bitcoin is. And that's what I really love about this section, is that we're seeing this multiple times, where first it's micropayment services and tipping bots and Satoshi Dice, and then we're seeing normal, like, retail merchant pricing being priced out of the market. And it was very, very short order that the block size is full with that sort of activity, because you're needing, like, retail payments. Again, we talked about this on Ian Griggs' amazing piece on the 7 layers of financial cryptography. Retail payments is an end game. It's going to be on one of the highest layers because it's the highest transaction throughput need with the lowest typical assurances. It's the low end of the capital stock as far as needing transaction assurances. You don't need, a coffee payment does not need the level of assurances as buying a house. And just like he talks about, we can't just ignore the fact that there's been centuries, thousands of years, really, of innovation and evolution of the financial system on figuring out how to scale unique systems and like high assurance and base layer contracts at like the government, the central bank layer, at the lowest level of what ownership is in society, to scale those things out to a plethora of other markets, exchanges, services, retail payments, another, you know, a huge variety of payment networks. Like, we can't just ignore, like, pretend that that didn't happen. And it makes no sense for us to ignore all the innovation that has happened in that way when we have a better foundation to actually rebuild these things on top of. So he says in this section that, you know, the pricing out of these previous types of transactions, this organic growth of transactions from users who are trying to take advantage of the unique features of Bitcoin, the unique assurances that Bitcoin provides. While this is only anecdotal evidence, they offer strong indications that the demand for Bitcoin transactions is considerably inelastic. What this suggests is that the supply of space in blocks will find demand even as transaction fees increase. The reasons for this are subjective and hard to accurately assay, as they are simply the result of decisions made by independent market actors. Nevertheless, this observation has strong implications for anyone interested in figuring out Bitcoin's value proposition. The fact that we have priced out already things like micropayment services, faucets, tipping bots, Satoshi Dice, and then we have also moved to price out essentially retail payments on the base layer is exactly the sort of evidence that you should take into account, that you should be observing and thinking very strongly about what it means for the value proposition that Bitcoin provides. If we still have full blocks when Bitcoin transaction fees are $3 and that makes it not viable to buy a coffee, then you should deeply reconsider that buying a coffee has anything to do with Bitcoin's value proposition. That is one of the most important takeaways of this. This is a new financial infrastructure layer. Its value proposition, its assurances are orders of magnitude more important and more fundamental than whether or not you can safely and censorship-resistantly buy a coffee this morning. But what you can build with that system as a foundation is unbelievable, and the Lightning Network is one of the first implementations of a contracting system on top of Bitcoin, and one that enables the extension of the network, one that allows you to create networks on top of the network. And that's one of the most fascinating things about this. It's a system to build liquidity networks for those retail layers, for those more complex services. Because that's exactly that's kind of the broadness of Lightning. You can actually do a whole lot more with an HTLC, with the way Lightning locks up funds, and the fact that you've got this constant, always present proof of reserves within the payment. I mean, you have higher assurances with a Lightning Network payment than you have with anything in the legacy financial system. You have higher assurances than you do with holding cash dollars, which is crazy to think about. Like, you have proof of reserves in the channel, you have the insurance clause to exit, and basically no matter what, you have all of the data necessary to publish to the Bitcoin blockchain. So in that case, the Bitcoin, just like he says in this piece, the Bitcoin blockchain acts as an arbiter, as an adjudicator. It's the judge as to what the truth of the contract is. And in doing so, it re-enables all of these use cases that actually got priced out on chain. And Lightning is making these viable again. Not only viable, but sustainably viable in such a way that we can actually scale this out, rather than having, I mean, think about it. One service, Satoshi Dice, was filling up blocks 80 to 90%. Now think about the fact that there could be hundreds or thousands of them now with micropayments on Lightning, and it might not change it might not put pressure on the Bitcoin blockchain at all. It will just make all, you're doing 100,000 Satoshi payments constantly, which I do on Lightning all the time, and they're cheap. You almost always get like one sat transaction fee for those. And what's funny is that one of the dynamics of Lightning Network that I think is so fascinating, that is actually critically important for the economics of Bitcoin to be sustained as far as fees, is that transaction fees are reallocated realigned to the amount of liquidity needed, the amount of value. Like on the Bitcoin blockchain, that's not the case. It's flat data cost. So if you have a one input to one output If you're moving a dollar, it costs the exact same amount as a one input to one output transaction that sends $1 billion. Literally, it's the exact same cost because it is only about the data. It doesn't give, Bitcoin does not care whatever about the amount in the payment because the amount of value isn't important to Bitcoin. Bitcoin is about securing the data, the ownership, the signature, the owner itself. Who has the right to move this? I don't really care about the amount as long as it all balances out. No address. An address with one Bitcoin is no more important or given no greater priority than an address with 0.001 Bitcoin in the context of validity, in the context of a valid signature of ownership. But because of that, you don't have you don't have the people who are making the most use of those assurances actually paying for the security. But back in Lightning, you actually realign those incentives where, like, when somebody moves like a million Satoshi payment through my channel, I'll actually charge, I get a much larger fee because there's like a fee rate thing that you can set. I think it's set by default at like 100 or something like that. But I actually bumped mine up a little bit just because that's like, you know, max that a lot of my channels can actually manage. So every single, like every additional million Satoshi sent through like a payment of mine or sent through a channel of mine, it adds, I think, 100 Satoshis or 1,000 Satoshis. It's like a cent or 10 cent or something like that. I don't know. It's small. I can't remember it for some reason right at the moment. But I don't care. I can send one Satoshi payments or out 100 Satoshi payments all day and basically do it for free. I'll just do it for, you know, a Satoshi. But I need to charge a decent fee, something that can actually aggregate to if I'm going to have to actually like rebalance or, you know, get channels, close channels or add liquidity or whatever to my channel or splice in or loop in, you know, whatever it is. If I have to go back on chain to basically have the availability to make payments because I'm routing for other people, well, then it makes sense to charge based on the transaction amount, to charge a 0.1% fee basically across the board. That means that those small payments can happen again. That means I can route thousands of those without much of a headache and it doesn't really matter, and I can aggregate fees from all of them. And my own use of Lightning is actually a really good example of Jayvon's paradox here, is that when it becomes more efficient, when we figure out a far better and more cost-effective way to use this tool to get these assurances in smaller payments, it gets used way more. And the reason that I consider myself basically anecdotal proof of this paradox is that I genuinely think I have done more Lightning payments, I've made more transactions on Lightning in the last 6 months than I've ever posted to the Bitcoin blockchain. Like, I know my use. I have never done daily transactions on the Bitcoin chain, even when fees were nearly nothing. I wasn't just sending Bitcoin every morning and afternoon from wallet to wallet. Like, I was just never doing it as if it was just freely available and easy. You know, there was always like a, you know, wait for confirmation. It was, I mean, I could just basically accept that it was there, but it's just never quite that experience. And Lightning is a wholly different mechanism. Like, I've been making payments and receiving payments 2 to 3 times a day. In fact, I've been paying back people that have been working for me. I've been paying them with Lightning. I use Fold all the time. I've been rebuilding my computer. Right now I'm actually running this off my laptop, so I've moved my workflow to a completely new computer. And I'm rebuilding my old one. If anybody saw on Twitter, I had a scare with a hard drive that died on me, and it took me about like 4 hours really to get it back up and running and actually repair and verify the disk partition. No idea why, but I was in the middle of recording an episode just like this, and the partition just went out on me. Like, it wouldn't mount. The a computer, the operating system, wouldn't recognize the drive. And all the everything that I was recording was on that drive too. So I was reading off of that drive to record, and I noticed it. I noticed something was up because I went to play, like I paused this while I was trying to get my thoughts together and scrolled back to kind of catch the context of what I was talking about, and nothing would play. Like all my waveform was there. The file looked like it was normal. Everything looked like my setup always does. I play it back, no sound. And I was like, that screwed with my sound card and like inputs and outputs for like 10 minutes wondering what the hell was going on before I realized that the drive just wasn't there. So anyway, I basically have that computer in about 15 pieces. I've screwed out, I've drilled out all of the rivets. I might post a video about it if anybody actually wants to see it. So, you know, keep an eye out at the Crypto Economy. But I'm going to get that beast back together and make it an officially a Linux machine and move my workflow completely over there. But I digress. So the whole point of this was that I called the Lowe's yesterday, and I've been using Strike. My brother's been using Strike to pay me back for stuff I've been getting for him for BitBlock Boom, which we've done, I don't know, probably 8 or 9 transactions in the last week. I did 2 at Lowe's yesterday, getting materials for the new case. I'm just building it out of wood. I got Starbucks this morning. I just got Starbucks again after I went out just a little bit ago. I mean, I do payments like crazy over Lightning. It's just so easy. And if I keep it under, you know, 1 million sats or whatever, my fees are 2 satoshis, 3 satoshis to route most of these. And they're instant. Like, you know, it's hard to beat. And another funny thing is that it's private. Like when I make a payment to someone, I actually feel a whole lot safer about it when I'm on Lightning, because like I just send a payment with, you know, straight to their public key, like on Lightning, and they can't look at the payment and be like, what's this address? And then go look it up on a Block Explorer and see that like, oh, look at all the coins he has elsewhere in that wallet. Like, it's not connected to that. It's a payment that came over their channel. I mean, there are a lot of benefits to this thing, and it starts to realize the real potential of a peer-to-peer cash payment system on top of the peer-to-peer cash ownership and monetary system. And this will bring fees to Bitcoin. This will increase the demand for on-chain transactions. This will enable use cases that make Bitcoin and Lightning make so many services and new features available that the demand to use it will explode, and it will be exactly that justifies higher and higher transactions to pay miners. This is what miners need to get big transaction fees. This is what is necessary to actually make this thing sustainable and secure in the long run. And there's another little comment that I highlighted in this article that I just thought was really, really great, was that there was a conference call with Wences Caceres from Zappo, and said that his company was doing upwards of 500,000 transactions per day off chain. They're basically running, I mean, I don't know for certain, I don't know the specific details, but I'm sure like with other businesses and other exchanges, they're keeping a running tally of all of these transactions so that they can settle at the end of the day. You know, that's what exchanges do. That's what financial services companies do. And because of that, they're not actually using Bitcoin. All of those transactions, those are the ones taking fees away from the miners, because they're trusting each other rather than using something that would actually aggregate fees online. And on the chain. And it's also requiring a more trusted relationship. It's basically limiting the subset of companies that they could safely do business with. But now imagine all of those are over a Lightning payment channel, that you actually have an agreement with a massive amount of liquidity between these two businesses, and they're constantly settling back and forth, and they still do one on-chain transaction, but they actually settle each and every payment throughout the day, and they only settle when everything is balanced or loop out or whatever it is When everything is imbalanced in one direction very, very heavily. But otherwise, if everything kind of balances out, this thing can stay open and active indefinitely without any on-chain footprint other than the original opening transaction. And they don't have to trust it. They don't have to have as trusted of a relationship. They can actually do business with a larger variety of jurisdictions and take on a greater amount of risk in who they might want to do business with and like how new the company is or in what jurisdiction they are or under what set of regulatory environment they might be in because they have that insurance clause to exit. Whereas if they're just doing 500,000 transactions off chain and totally having to trust that at the end of the day, somebody's going to broadcast a transaction that settles this all. And there's no guarantee basically that it's going to be done. They have to know that they can go to, the UK courts or the US courts or whatever it is and enforce that contract. That's totally trusted relationship. Whereas Lightning is extremely trust minimized. They can broadcast to the Bitcoin chain and Bitcoin can be the adjudicator without having to trust any court. Like maybe they're in China and the other company's in the US. Doesn't matter. Bitcoin is universal. Bitcoin is global. It's an independent court that will always settle to the rightful owner based on the contract details. And Lightning makes that possible. And I think we're going to increasingly see that sort of thing where you see very large liquidity agreements between companies in the space that it's essentially a giant channel. We're going to see payment networks explode all over the place. I think we're going to finally start seeing these walled gardens between payment apps like PayPal, Venmo, Cash App, and Stripe. We're going to see the walled gardens break down, and they're going to be compatible with each other in the sense that you can send dollars. Stripe, gosh, Stripe is such a breakthrough. I mean, Stripe is the reason my brother is able to use this so easily. He just connected it to his bank account. And whenever he's trying to pay me back for the amount, I send him an invoice from my BTC Pay. I'm using Zap, so it's just kind of my Zap wallet. I just shoot him an invoice for whatever the amount is. And he just deposits it straight to Stripe and then sends it straight to me. And it could not be simpler. Guys, this is stage one. This is just barely breaking the surface of what this is going to look like. And I think the key takeaway from this article is that this is going to enable so many new markets. It's re-enabled things like Satoshi Dice and tipping. I get tipping.me tips all the time. We play with the LNTX bot. We do 10 Satoshi things. I've been playing with Sphinx, the Lightning chat app, and been paying 10 Satoshis to unlock pictures and stuff and post pictures to get other people to send me 10 Satoshis. Micropayments are back in a much bigger way than they ever were viable on the actual Bitcoin blockchain, and not with one service, with hundreds of services. I've been playing little gambling games just for fun. Like I said, multiple chat apps that allow you to do little things like that. Tip bots, all of these things. Faucets, lnpay.co is awesome. And we used it to actually give people free Satoshis. I think it was like a dollar's worth of Satoshis or something like that when they came to the Bitcoin birthday party this past year. And we just set it up and they would install Breeze and then scan it. And then it would immediately send them the Bitcoin or the Satoshis. All of this is back because Lightning enables it. It's going to enable so many new markets, so many new features, so many new services, and an entirely new infrastructure for a global retail payment system. And one without borders and without business hours and without transfer fees. But completely open, where anybody can compete and provide a service for. On-chain fees are not going to be a problem. Like that block space, people are going to be desperate to get that block space and to settle these settled transactions and value on an incredible amount of value and services made available on this entirely new financial system. And it does not take away fees from miners. This is how we actually make sure miners stay in business, that Bitcoin is in fact sustainable for the long haul. And I myself am not worried. I think we're going to get multiple levels of innovations extending this to layer two, layer three, maybe even further. There's no telling how this is going to go. But I think our future is incredibly bright, and I am loving Lightning, and I'm using it more and more every day. So I hope you guys are getting on board. If you aren't, you fail. Strike, I think, went public. I think they're officially out. Go to the Twitter tag at LN_strike and check them out. If you haven't done it yet, it's time to do so. They are genuinely one of the coolest services in Lightning so far, and I am absolutely loving them. I will shill them day and night. And the only other company that I'm going to shill right now is Swan Bitcoin, because they'll give you money for free. They'll give you 10 free Satoshis. And the thing that everybody should be doing, whether or not they get a chance to actually play with Lightning, is you must be stacking sats. Auto DCA is the way to do this. Dollar cost average. Bitcoin took a nosedive today, and you don't want to be watching the price. You just want to be stacking all the time. I got my email, like I usually do every Tuesday or every late Monday night, whatever it was, that I stacked sats again, and it just makes me feel good. I feel safe knowing that I am always adding to my Bitcoin savings plan for the future, and I'm ready for this. SwanBitcoin.com/guy will get you that $10 free, and it will also support Bitcoin Audible by telling them that I'm the one who took you there. So much love to all of you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Stack sats for yourself, but use my reference link for me. And I will catch y'all next time on Bitcoin Audible. I got a great episode coming tomorrow. I think I'm going to do a guy's take episode. And there are some major developments in the winds, and you are not going to want to miss it. So stay subscribed, Bitcoin Audible, and follow me on Twitter at Bitcoin Audible and at The Crypto Economy. This is the time to start telling all of your curious friends about Bitcoin, to get them their first step down the rabbit hole. Send them to Bitcoin Audible, where they can learn everything there is to know about Bitcoin, about the history of money, about the economics, about the cryptography, about the cypherpunks that made this all possible, and the philosophy at its heart. Tell them to check out Guy Swan, and I'll tell them all about it. Thank you so much. Until next time, guys, take it easy.